The conversation continues. 203-333-9422. The Lisa Wexler Show is back on WICC 600.
And welcome back. Norwalk Police Chief Thomas Kohawick is with us. He's been with the Norwalk Police Department for over 38 years, the last eight as chief. He holds a BA in criminal justice and a master's degree in public administration. He's also an adjunct faculty member at Post University, and he's got a lot of different public activities, including being the treasurer of the Norwalk Police Activities League. And he was appointed as a commissioner on the Accreditation for Law Enforcement Agencies in January of 2020. He joins us now. Our telephone number for you to be part of the conversation is 203-333-9422. Good morning, Chief. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
A pleasure. So, Chief, I want to begin with a story that hit just a few months ago, because you and I haven't had a chance to talk about it directly, in 2021, of the couple. I'm calling them a couple. They were found at the Even Hotel in Norwalk. You were on record as being publicly reprimanding of their behavior. I think that they might have even been followed up with an arrest. But the bottom line is they were found to be in dereliction of duty, being on duty, but not being in a condition to be able to perform their duties. There was also reckless endangerment of a minor. And I don't want to go into their names right now. I don't think that that's particularly necessary, Chief. But my question is with respect to that case, and it was noted in all the papers. When you're the supervisor of something like that, does that cause you to look at the policy of the Norwalk Police Department in terms of so many hours in which police officers are spending, sometimes almost another 40, maybe more, doing other jobs rather than the full-time job that they were hired to do?
Well, in a sense, yes, but in reality, no, because a lot of that is governed by the collective bargaining agreements. And here in Norwalk, there are limits on extra duty work. It's limited to a maximum of 16 hours a day, whether it's on duty or extra duty. But outside of that, officers are permitted to work as many hours in a week as long as they don't exceed 16 in any 24-hour period. So unless or until that issue when the contract is renegotiated, that's what we have to live with. And generally, it's not really an issue. And I don't know that that really came into play in this case. I don't think that was the issue that we were dealing with here.
Do you think, as a matter of policy, that it's a good idea for police officers to be able to work 16 out of 24 hours a day?
Well, on the face of it, you'd say that that's a lot of hours. But in reality, looking at the officers here, and there's very few that work that much, but we do have several that do a lot of extra duty work. And those officers, for the most part, are also officers that rarely take sick time, generally don't have disciplinary issues. So in reality, we have very little issues with officers who work a lot of hours. And a lot of them are very productive in their regular routine, you know, jobs as well. So it's something that we always are looking at, but we're always monitoring performance in general. So whether someone works a lot or works very little, we're always monitoring performance to see if that has an impact.
How do you monitor performance? Do you do this with written assessments or verbal? How are your police monitored in terms of their job performance?
Yeah, I can't speak for other agencies, but here there are annual evaluations that are conducted. But beyond that, on a day-to-day basis, we ask the supervisors to monitor. We also look on a monthly basis at the monthly reports from our shift commanders, who produce reports on sick time, workers' comp time, on performance related to selective enforcement, self-initiated activities, number of calls, quality of the written reports. You know, all that comes into play. But a lot of that is done on a daily and weekly and monthly basis. The annual evaluation is more of a broad brush look. So it's really that day-to-day and week-to-week, month-to-month review. But we also have what we call an employee alert system, a personal early warning system, where we data enter any accidents the officers are involved in, any complaints that are made against them, sick time, use of force incidents. All of that is entered into the database, and then that's reviewed. That if we see something is a little out of line relative to the norm, we can then take a deeper dive to see if it's warranted or something we need to get involved with.
We're talking with Newark Police Chief Thomas Kohlhauwerk. Chief, when you were looking at the Derek Chauvin case, and, you know, a lot has been made of the fact that Derek Chauvin was a multiple prior offender in terms of excessive force complaints, and also having been with prior police departments in Minneapolis, St. Paul, not knowing of those excessive force. Can you tell me, as a local police leader here, how you approach getting bad apples out of the department when you see that they're there, and whether or not you think the public or you as a police officer need better tools to do something about them when they're there?
Well, to begin with, it comes to, you know, the selection and recruitment. And in that regard, given the state laws that are in place, and the post council here has also guidelines on hiring and what has to be done, and there has to be a thorough background check done on anybody that comes into this line of work. And that includes a full polygraph examination and includes a psychological evaluation, along with traditional medical evaluations and physical assessments. I don't know Minnesota law. I don't know if they do polygraphs. A lot of states do not allow that to be done. I can't speak for Minnesota. Similarly, I don't know what kind of psych evaluation is required there, so I can't speak to that. But here in Connecticut, a background is very, very, very comprehensive and very involved. Not to say that someone may get through even with that, as we see, unfortunately, even with all that done and with a psychological evaluation by professionals, you know, some things are missed and, you know, unfortunate, but it happens. But we do our best to try to screen out people before they actually even get here. And I think in Connecticut, the systems that are in place do a pretty good job of that, where we can weed out. And if someone had a history at another agency that was a very negative history, obviously that should come to bear when you're deciding whether you're going to bring them on to your agency, knowing that if you're probably going to have that person for 20 or 30 years.
Do you think that the public, and I'm just asking you in your own opinion, Chief, do you think that the public ought to be able to obtain the personnel record of police officers in terms of whether or not there have been complaints about excessive force on the job?
In Connecticut, they're able to do that. By freedom of information laws, that information is available. And in fact, here in Norwalk, we actually, in our annual report, we publish all complaints, not specifically summaries of each, but we give statistics on how many complaints are received, the type of complaint that was received, and the outcome, whether it was substantiated, whether it was unsubstantiated, if it was substantiated, whether there was action taken, that kind of thing. So that's not true of all agencies, but we do it here in Norwalk pursuant to our accreditation standards. But so the information generally is out there if people are interested in seeing it. When it comes to personnel files related to personal information, no, I think, you know, there has to be a line drawn. But the danger also is people can make complaints whether they're valid or not. And we need to be careful that simply because a complaint is made doesn't mean that that actually occurred. It doesn't mean that the officer was actually wrong. So I think if it's a justified, substantiated complaint, yes, that, you know, that should be out there. But in Connecticut, even if it's not substantiated, that information is still available. But we need to take that and also, you know, look at it. Like you said, with former Officer Chauvin in Minnesota, I've heard that there were a lot of complaints made against them. I've never really heard whether they were substantiated, but nothing was done, or, you know, what the outcome of those complaints was. So you know, it's difficult to speak on that.
It is difficult, you know, and it's interesting when somebody has one or two scattered among, you know, over many years, one might be inclined to definitely look at that, perhaps with a grain of salt, because it's one or two over a spectrum of careers where you've had thousands of interactions with the public. But in Derek Chauvin's case, I'm told there were 18. That sort of rises to the level of somebody needs to look at it anyway. Do you know what I mean, Chief?
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. And, you know, yeah. That's a large department. And speaking from Norwalk, I know we're a large department here in Connecticut, but in reality, compared to the major cities, we're not a large department. And here, we have very few complaints. So we can really look at each one very closely. And in fact, in 2020, we had one complaint of excessive force total against an officer here, which we found was not substantiated using the body camera. So Those issues aren't the same here because the complaints are very few and far between, and we can really take a deep dive into any use of force complaint. And in fact, here in Norwalk and many agencies in Connecticut, if an officer uses any type of force, a very detailed report is written, a separate use of force report is submitted. We review it at every level, up to the deputy chief and myself. And then we also review the officer's body camera on every use of force, whether there was a complaint made or not, to make sure that things were done, you know, pursuant to policy. So I think we're fortunate here in Connecticut. Most agencies are small enough to be able to really look at things very closely on a day-to-day basis. In very large agencies, maybe that's not as possible.
How many officers are in Norwalk, Chief?
We're authorized for 181 sworn.
Wow, that is a big police. Okay, we've got a bunch of people that have been very patient waiting on hold. We're going to go first to Gina from Norwalk. Gina, welcome to the show today. Good morning. You're on the air with Police Chief Thomas Kohawick. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning, Chief.
Good morning.
I'm calling because I'm a lifelong resident of Norwalk. And there was a podcast on April 13th that ran, and it's about the April Grisanti case. And I was calling because the woman who called was very upset, trying very hard to find her sister. And she was begging and pleading for help from all places she can. And she mentioned the police department. And she said that the police department was 36 years and nothing has been really done. And no reward was ever presented, that this is a case where people can just speak out, call the tip line, call whoever, and money talks. And there are rewards popping up for other cases all over the place. And that, you know, that 36 years is a very long time to wait. It's agony for the family. And why are you not doing more work instead of just sitting around waiting for the phone to ring? Why are you not offering a reward of some kind? Why are you knocking on doors? Why are you waiting for people?
All right,
it's a
Gina,
very old
Gina,
case. People are older.
Okay, Gina. Gina, I'd like the chief to be able to answer. We're talking about the Grisanti case. This was definitely got a lot of public response, Chief, a lot of anguish, both online and on my show. People wondering about the missing April Grisanti. Can you tell us how you're responding to the family, please?
Yeah, and unfortunately, I know that the family, and I don't know if this is Gina herself, but from the family. But in any case, I know that the family is very frustrated, and I know that they're angered, and I can understand that. And unfortunately, a lot of that anger has been directed towards the police department and towards the investigators that have worked on the case. And that's just, that just comes with the job because we're still going to try to go out there and do what we can. But what I can say is our investigators over the last number of years, and including as recently as last week, have been following up on leads, re-interviewing people. We're not just sitting back. We are reaching out.
Well, why is that not public notice? Why is that not being told to the family? Because this was only about a week or so ago that this person was on the show. And there is nothing being told to the family. The family is requesting information all the time, according to what I heard. And they're asking for help from the police department so they can actually help themselves maybe try and get their own leads. And I think she said she was posting on, different patch.com and next door and things like that and asking for tips. And she got really good tips that have been blown off by the police department. So if that's the case, why is not the family being told and maybe relieving some of their frustration? The mother, the sister, why isn't anybody being told? If you're actually working on it.
All right, let's hear the chief answer.
It's
a good point.
But not recently.
Gina, it's a good point. Chief, why aren't you involving the family in this?
We've offered that to the family. In fact, as recently as this morning, I responded to a family member who sent me a long email complaining about our lack of attention and offered to have them meet with the investigators. They have not wanted to do that. What the family has wanted is a complete, unredacted copy of the report. And that's something
that's
we can't give them right now.
That's what she said.
Okay,
hold on.
Caller Gina, hold on. Chief, why after so many years would an unredacted police report not be available to the family, particularly in this case where the police believe that the person who actually committed the crime is dead? Why would you hide anything from the family at this point?
Well, it's not a question of hiding. It's a question of there's a lot of information there that will determine whether some of the tips that we're getting are credible. If that information was made public, it'd be very difficult to vet new information coming in if people had the full grasp of what we already know and what we're looking at.
That's not what was asked. What was asked by the person was that the file, but that information from the file, as you know, yes, a copy, but what he was saying on the podcast was that she needs information that you have names, dates, and times. She didn't say it was going to go public. That doesn't mean anything. She was just saying that she needs to, she doesn't know a lot of stuff, and she doesn't know where to start looking for her sister herself without some information, like where her wallet was found. She said something about the wallet was found. She said something about you have names and places that you're not, that she had given tips
again,
to
I
you
will,
about.
Okay,
will,
all right, let the chief finish. Jeannie,
you
got to let
you,
the chief finish.
And I, as I said, you know, in the email, and I know that the investigators have also offered, we're very happy to meet directly with the family and discuss the case, answer questions, talk about what's been done, but we're not going to release a full unredacted copy of the reports. We also don't know if there was a co-conspirator that we may develop. Yes, we believe we know.
That's been some of the tips.
Gina, you have to let the police chief finish his answer. You have to do that. It's my show, and I have to permit him to finish his answer. I want to hear what he has to say.
You're right.
Go ahead, chief.
Go ahead.
So, yes, we don't know if there was someone that was a co-conspirator, if someone helped dispose of the body. Those are all things that are still open. And until we close the case, so to speak, until we feel that every lead that we've gotten, every credible lead has been followed up, every person has been interviewed and re-interviewed. Some people that have been involved in this case have been interviewed 4 and 5 times over the past 30 years, 36 years. Some people who didn't talk to us 36 years ago have spoken to us in the last 1 to 2 years. Granted, the information didn't lead to the location of the body. But I can tell you that a detective spoke to an individual as recently as last week or a week and a half to re-interview someone who we thought may be able to give us information that would lead to some more follow-up work. So,
the family doesn't seem to know about that. And then if they do want to meet with you, are you going to be up front? Are you going to give them names and places and times? Are you sending out cadaver dogs? Are you doing, I believe she said something about the reservoir was checked and the cadaver dogs went crazy. There was a lot of things that she spoke about 2 weeks ago that were, you know, there was a lot of leads that didn't seem to be followed up and that they were taken as not credible.
Yeah, I can't speak to the podcast because I didn't hear it. But what I can tell you that is we did have information that seemed to be credible regarding a reservoir, not here in Norwalk, but a reservoir.
Right.
It was searched with cadaver dogs. We had our scuba team conducted underwater search of the area. That was done as recently, I believe, as November of last year or October of last year. And unfortunately, nothing was found. If we do get credible information, we're going to follow up on it as we did with this reservoir.
What about a reward? You have rewards all the time. The city of Norwalk should put out a reward for people to talk. Everybody knows this is not a whodunit case. This is a case where it's all about who knows something.
The city of Norwalk has never,
to
my knowledge, the city of Norwalk has never put up a reward. The rewards
there
have
was one
generally
for, no. There were several that pop up on an email that said there was one currently for $50,000 for a murder case.
That's from the state of Connecticut. What we do is we reach out to the state's attorney's office. We reach out to the state's attorney's office. We give them the information and we ask them if they would approve a reward. They go through the governor's office and then the reward is approved or
not
approved.
But in 36 years, you never did that.
I believe that was done back prior to the suspect passing.
Okay, but now he's dead and people still are afraid to speak. But money talks. COVID. Everybody's broke. Do something for this family.
Okay. Gina, thank you very much for the call. Chief, I know we've got other callers as well, but Chief, what I'm hearing in between, and it's not my family, but I'm hearing a real plea for some action if it's possible. Is it possible for Norwalk to go up the channels again and try and ask for a reward?
Yeah, I'll look into that. I don't know that they will do it since it's not for – normally the rewards are for the arrest conviction of a suspect.
Right.
In this case,
right.
We're looking more for location of the body. And yeah. I don't know that qualifies, but –
Is that still considered, though, an open cold case because there is no body from a police point of view?
From our point of view, yes, because, again, we don't know if someone helped him dispose of the body. We don't know exactly how she was killed. So there's okay. information there that is still, still out there to try to be determined. I don't know. I mean, I can't guarantee that we'll ever get to the full bottom of it. But I do know that we've spent thousands and thousands of hours over the last number of years. We had an individual here that solved another cold case, worked on this for quite a bit of time. It was then turned over to our actual cold case unit in November of last year, and new detectives have now reviewed all the information, reviewed the evidence, and are starting to and have started to re-interview people where they feel that there may be some more information. So it hasn't languished, despite the family's concerns. I can assure them that it hasn't languished. And again, if they'd like to come in and meet with us, I'd be happy to do that.
I think that's a good idea because, Chief, if you know information that would make the family feel like they're being thought of and cared about, that really goes a long way. And if there's a lack of communication, it breeds distrust and anxiety.
No, I agree. And again, from my understanding, that's been offered numerous times and they haven't taken up on it. But if I'm wrong, that's fine. But I'm willing to, I'm willing to put out the olive branch and invite them to come in and speak to us.
Thank you, Chief. Do we still have Beth Holding? Yes, Beth from Norwalk. Hi, Beth. Welcome to the show. You're on the air with Police Chief Thomas Kohawick.
Hello. I was just, going to just reiterate the reward. I understand, you've been working on this, but isn't there a way you could go up through the chain of command through Connecticut and try to get a reward put out there so someone can come forward with some information?
Yeah, as I said, we'll look into that again. I don't know that it qualifies, but if it does, we'll definitely seek that.
Okay. Thank you, Beth.
Thank you.
Thank you, Beth. Thank you for the call. Well, Chief, I'm really glad that you came on today. Thanks for giving us so much of your time. There's a lot more I really wanted to ask you about, but we'll have to get to it another time because we're here on live radio and I'm coming up against a commercial. But listen, Chief, please come back on the show. Thank you for the work that you're doing, and we really do appreciate you taking calls from the public today.
No, thank you, and reach out anytime. I'm glad to come back on.
Thank you so much, Norwalk Police Chief Thomas Kohawick on the Lisa Wexler Show. We'll be right back.